choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
President Kennedy making a promise he did not live to see, but we all saw it if we were alive in the 60s and 70s, getting to the moon and putting some flags down and bringing some rocks back. Okay, maybe we need a little more follow through there on the space travel thing. But what if President Kennedy had said something very different way back then? Something like,
we choose
to plot the actual circuits of what happens when we fall in love or retrieve a memory or form an idea in our brains.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Doesn't quite have the punch of going to the moon, but these poetic-sounding challenges are much harder than going to the moon. And back in the 60s, we hadn't even glimpsed the technology, tools, mathematics, computer science, understanding of neurobiology to demystify something like this.
Annie and I broke up, and I still can't get my mind around that. You know, I keep sifting the pieces of the relationship through my mind and examining my life and trying to figure out, where did the screw-up come?
What if Woody could just dial up a chart of where his brain went wrong there with Annie Hall? Shorter movie, I guess. But we're always getting lost in the poorly understood fog of our own brains.
I saw a great movie last night. Yeah, it was on The Late Show. It was what was it called? It's a classic. It's a classic. I hate this. I hate it when this happens.
Well, what was it about?
Okay, we might have Googled the answer to that, but can we understand what happens when our brain loses a memory and thinks of the idea to Google its way around it? I mean, what is the neural circuit for exactly that? And then there are times when the old brain rudder goes out completely.
People out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and...
We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know.
Fool me once, shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
This sort of cranial navigation crisis is just as likely to occur in the mind of a teen beauty pageant winner from South Carolina in a high-stress situation as it is for a president, George W. Bush, in a high-stress situation. And, of course, when Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld would sometimes speak, only he seemed to know what he was talking about.
The ones we don't know, we don't know.
Yes, in the universe of brains, there is an elusive set of obviously very flexible rules that on some level accounts for all of the personalities who have ever lived. What if those rules and means of creating and sending signals inside the brain could be understood, decoded, layout? It's hard even to find the language to describe what I'm talking about here. President Obama is getting ready, though, to propose a major U.S. initiative, possibly close to the scale of John F. Kennedy's space program, to do what's being called map the activity of the brain. Beyond anatomy, this would be a precise description of the events in the brain that produce thoughts and emotions, consciousness. Dr. Rafael Yust is a neuroscientist at Columbia University and one of the coordinators of the Obama administration's new brain mapping project. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also right here in the studio is Gary Marcus, a cognitive psychologist at NYU and blogger for The New Yorker. His newest book is called Guitar Zero, The New Musician and the Science of Learning. Gary, welcome.
Thanks very much.
So, Dr. Yust, this is pretty exciting stuff here, to specify brain activity as opposed to brain anatomy.
Yes, this is a very exciting time. I think neuroscientists in general feel that we don't understand how the brain works, and this could be the biggest challenge of science and technology today. And that at the same time, this is not magic. The brain is not magic. And the reason partly why we don't understand how the brain works is because it's made out of all these neurons, and we just cannot see all the patterns of firing. So we're trying to launch an initiative to build new types of tools of technology to enable us to see the activity of every neuron in the brain.
And you mean imaging, seeing the activity, seeing what the neurons do, how they interact with other neurons, what you can make them do to in a sense, find the source code, the operating language of the brain, something
That's
like that?
That's right. We want to see the inner workings of the mind. And we think that by taking this data, many people, not just us, but groups of people and generations of people will be able to analyze, to decipher precisely how brain activity creates the mind and how it makes us what we are.
Human subjects here? Will we be relying on animals? You take the skulls off?
We'll start with animals, and this is work that's starting to be done in many laboratories around the world. laboratory animals. And as we get better with our tools, we'll hopefully we'll come up with non-invasive ways of taking the same types of measurements in humans, particularly in human patients, because all of this has a clinical side to it, because we need to understand how the diseased brain malfunctions, what are the patterns of activity that are essentially dysfunctional in a patient that suffers from a brain disease.
Gary Marcus, what's the track record of governments taking on an initiative like this, and should they come up with a profile of all brain activity? Would that scare you or make you feel good?
I think it's a great idea. I think there's some limitations from what I've read so far, which is not very much, but I think it's a fantastic idea to get all of this data. It doesn't mean that once we have the data that it's going to follow like the night follows the day, that we understand the data. So you can think about the Human Genome Project. We know the DNA sequence for all the genes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we know, for example, when those genes switch on and off. So first project was just getting the protein, I mean, getting the sequence of nucleotides, but figuring out the regulation of genes is a really complicated problem. In the same way, figuring out how all of this brain activity relates to behavior is a challenge.
Gary Marcus is a cognitive psychologist at NYU and a blogger for The New Yorker. You're listening to The Takeaway. So if you're talking about emergent activity here, Dr. Yuest and Gary Marcus, I wonder, Marcus, if you could describe what that is by specifying a whole range of very complicated data, processes, events in the brain. Some systematic pattern is going to emerge. Gary, you begin, and then we'll get Dr. Yuest.
Well, there'll be different systematic patterns in different behaviors. So one of the questions that I wrote about in The New Yorker yesterday is the question about how you map all of that activity to behavior. So we're talking about techniques that are going to give us a fantastic amount of data, terabytes of data, maybe every time that an animal does something. And the question is to relate the somethings that they're doing to that behavior to try to understand the code by which that activity relates to what's going on.
Requires massive computer capability that's only just becoming available.
Yes, actually, I would describe it a little bit different. While we're trying to do something relatively simple, imagine that the brain is like a movie playing on a TV. And what neuroscientists have been doing now for the last 100 years is looking at that TV one pixel at a time. So in a way, you cannot understand the movie. You cannot comprehend what's going on in the TV if you look at the TV one pixel at a time.
Now, that's the neuroscientist view, but there's also the view of the sort of psychologist, psychiatrist, which is essentially like trying to analyze the movie by talking to the critics.
That's right. But at the same time, no one has ever watched the movie. So what we want to do is to actually provide the tool so that someone someday can actually watch the movie and see what the activity of all the neurons does. And then we have the suspicion and the belief that if you have that data, you will see patterns emerge. You will see things that you've never seen before.
Now, Gary talked about this a moment ago, the Human Genome Project. It specified the human genome, but then it suddenly opened all these other areas that we never even understood. Epigenetics, the noise and signal on the genome. What do you expect to emerge that you can't even predict right now?
Yeah, precisely. We think that there's going to be a new type of science created. A little bit like genomics was created out of the human genome. So a new type of science which will occupy the space that sits between neuroscience and psychology, and where you will actually be able to ask very rigorous questions about the behavior of animals and people and about mental processes based on hard data where you have the activity of every neuron in that piece of brain that generates the behavior of the thought.
Go ahead, Gary.
What I would say is that's absolutely right. There's a brilliant movie that you can find on the web now of a zebrafish during action. Its brain imaged at a very high level of detail, maybe not the same level of detail. So we've got these fabulous movies now, but you watch the movie, it's incredibly cool, and we want to know what it means. And so I think it shouldn't get lost that there needs to be money spent on theoretical developments that help us to interpret these movies. The movies are prerequisite. They're going to be an incredible resource that we don't have anything like now.
And the principle here is to offer the data in open source so that all scientists can use it for research?
Absolutely. We're inspired by the human genome. The data, as soon as it's collected, should be up in the web so that anyone anywhere in the world could actually mine it and try to decipher what these patterns mean.
Let's remind people that this is not the fMRI idea, because that really just takes a picture of what the blood is doing in the brain. You're going beyond that,
exactly.
Pulling the curtain back completely.
Exactly. We're trying to build microscopes of the mind, a little bit like observatories, except that instead of looking at the stars, we'll be looking at neurons, and we'll be looking at hopefully every neuron. So it's beyond fMRI because we'll be able to see the activity of every single cell.
You know, neuroscience has benefited from a lot of unusual, I guess you would say, animal helpers here. Squid in the case of discovering memory, lobsters in the case of neuron anatomy, zebrafish you referred to. Do you expect some animals to be particularly helpful in this case, or will we eventually have to rely on that animal ourselves?
I think that we have to do all of them. We'll have to look at things like the worm, which we have the complete connectome for, but we don't yet understand. These techniques will give us better data, not just about how things are connected in the worm, but how they're actually unfolding over time.
Connectome, can you help me with that?
Connectome is the interconnection between all the neurons, essentially. And that's the first step. This goes beyond that by saying not just which neurons are connected to each other, but what are they doing over time as an organism acts. And the worm is a good place to start. The fruit fly is a good place to start. The mouse, all of these animals, there's a lot already known. There are a lot of techniques for investigating them. Eventually, we'll make our way to humans, but we'll probably have to work out a lot of the puzzles in these simpler organisms that are well understood.
Is circuit a good way of thinking about this, or is it something way
beyond
that?
It's the best way we have right now, but we're talking out of ignorance. We're really entering uncharted territories. No one has been there. No one has looked at this movie before. So we're using metaphors from existing science and technology, from electrical engineering, to try to map our way little step by step.
But metaphors created by the brains you aim to study, isn't that
about
right? Absolutely. All right. Gary Marcus is a cognitive psychologist at the NYU, blogger for The New Yorker. Thanks for being here, Gary. Rafael Yust, you were just hearing, is a neuroscientist at Columbia University and one of the actual coordinators of the Obama administration's new brain mapping project. Gary and Rafael, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.